Campus FM presents 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri. Welcome to this anniversary series remembering 100 years of women on campus. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I shall be looking at this theme from many different angles: the sociological, the statistical, the anthropological, and the historical. I shall be asking questions about life for female students and academics on and off campus, yesterday and today, and possibly also tomorrow.
I'm very pleased to have with me today the Dean of the Faculty of Information and Communication Technology, Professor Engineer Carl James de Borno. And with him is a group of three women from an NGO called MissinTech. Berlin Caruana and her colleagues Rebecca Kai Kassar and Rowena Chappell. They are all here to discuss the present situation regarding women in this extremely important sector of information communication technology, ICT, and what this NGO does to encourage further participation. Welcome to you, Professor de Borno, and to you, ladies of MissinTech. I'm going to give a very brief bio of Professor de Borno because I feel it's important that listeners get to know our academics a little better. But it has to be rather a short bio because I know that we're going to use up our 28 minutes very quickly. And then after that, I shall leave the members of MissinTech to introduce themselves again with a few words to describe what they do. So Professor Engineer Carl James de Borno gained his PhD from Pavia. Apart from being a fresh Dean of ICT, and here we can put in a quick congratulations because it's a very new thing, he's professor in and head of the Department of Communications and Computer Engineering. I hope I got that right. Professor de Borno lectures, among other subjects, in communications theory and systems and the Internet of Things. Apart from being, of course, a warranted engineer, he was a founding member of the Multimedia and Wireless Communications Research Group, is a senior member of the IEEE, Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, a member of the Chamber of Engineers, and was involved in the EU FP6 and EU FP7, that's the funding period previous to Horizon 2020, which is what we're on right now, in the security and space programs. Benjamin, perhaps you could give us a brief picture of your ICT journey and then pass on to your colleague.
So I'm the co-founder and public relations officer of MissinTech. I entered university in 2014 and I graduated in 2017 in software development. I work as a software engineer at CS Technologies, and after I graduated, I started taking up small courses on the side, which helped me to keep up with this constantly evolving sector.
Great stuff. And what about Rebecca?
So, my name is Rebecca Kai-Kassar. I have graduated from the University of Malta in 2016 with a degree in software engineering, and again in 2018 with a master's in computer science. I'm currently a full-time software engineer, and I'm also the Secretary General within MissinTech.
And I am Rowena Chappell. Basically, I've been a student at UMCAST. I've studied my diploma in networking, and now I've recently finished my degree in business analytics. So basically, I help out with the business side of the NGO. And I've also always been interested in technology in general.
Let me start by asking Professor de Borno, what do you feel about the present statistics with regard to female participation in ICT courses? Obviously, you can talk about your faculty and maybe in general as well, and what the university feels it can do to perhaps help improve those statistics, if indeed they do need improving.
Okay, well, overall, if we look at female participation within the whole university, the statistics are very good, right? The problem comes when you get to the technical side. So if you look at the current stats of our faculty, the Faculty of ICT, we have only 20.8% of female participation in the undergraduate. Okay, you may tell me that's much better than 10 years ago.
Yes, I remember being 8, yes.
In our postgraduate, that number is only 13.7%. Right? So clearly, something needs to be done there to improve these numbers. As regards what the university can do, I think it needs more outreach. We need to let our youngsters understand what ICT really is, where it really gets you, and how it ties up with not just the main technology stream, but also in the social aspect of ICT, where ICT, our ICT graduates work in developing solutions that help humanity.
And we've spoken about this before, this idea that you do actually go to sixth forms and talk about ICT. I mean, I know that you've done that kind of outreach, but perhaps that's a bit late in the day.
Yes, that's quite late in the day, because at that point in time, the number of female students taking math and computing is already low. Mm. So definitely we need to find solutions that try to reach out to students at a younger age where they are deciding their career paths.
What about the fact that perhaps people have an idea about ICT that is not actually correct? Maybe people have a sort of a narrow idea about what IT is about computers and doing computing and that kind of thing. What about the kind of broad spectrum of activities that a career in ICT might actually involve? As you mentioned before, the sort of the social aspect, there are different things to do in ICT. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, first of all, ICT is so wide that in our faculty we have 5 undergraduate degree programs to try to cover up the area. We start from the engineering side. So we have the computer engineering area, where there we look at things that are more related, closer to the equipment. Right? So if you're using a mobile phone, you're using an ICT system. It's a computer system. It communicates with other devices. Right? We're looking at Internet of Things, where all the devices are communicating with each other. So you just imagine how many things you can do, how many new applications are up and coming. You have computer science active work there, which is more on the programming side. We have artificial intelligence. Again, more and more aspects are coming there in artificial intelligence in all aspects of life. Right? We have seen products in the news that they can replace even some foreign diagnostics. So you can do medical diagnostics using AI techniques, right, and at least helping practitioners to make better diagnostics.
So a huge gamut of possibilities.
Yeah, huge gamut of possibilities. Then you have software development. You have two ex-students here who come from the software development, so they can tell you more probably than me, right? there will you have again any application that user needs. So you have your business software, customer required type of software. Okay, and then we have the last component, which is computing and business, which marries the business with computing, which is obviously today a driver of the economy. You just hear things like blockchain, that's where it lies.
Absolutely. Bernine, perhaps you could start by telling us what prompted you and your friends to start up this NGO. Was it back in 2016, or yes. Have I got that date wrong?
Yes. Missing Tech is an NGO, a non-governmental organization, as well as a volunteer organization, which was set up in 2015, as you're saying. The idea came up after observing the lack of female students in each ICT course, as Professor De Bono was saying, as well as the lack of female representation in any ICT competition or any ICT event around the island. From then on, we started researching the situation in other countries, and it was quite evident that the situation in other countries is no better than Malta. It's across the world. In fact, women who work in tech, Malta doesn't account for even 4% of the workforce, so that's very low when compared to maybe some companies might have more women than others, but overall the number of women is still quite low. So we wanted to raise awareness about this noticeable gender gap in both the workplaces as well as universities and in schools. Missing Tech wants to tackle the problem at its core by raising awareness in kids and parents before they need to choose the subject at school, so before it's too late. We want to encourage and support young girls and introduce them to the world of ICT from a very young age. And we organize and take part in a variety of events to help us reach our mission. However, when setting up Missing Tech, we faced some challenges in the beginning. We had a lot of people who encouraged us and told us that we need to do this. But then we have some people who started labeling us as feminists. Obviously, though, you can expect those comments from organizations who focus on women. But we aren't envisioning a world that has more women than men working in the industry. We don't want that. We are trying to empower young girls to have equality in the sector, because having equality is important. Men and women can bring different ideas, and that's important, in my opinion, when working within any sector. So that's basically the idea why we started Missing Tech and why was it important.
The take-up, what you quite rightly said, the take-up of the STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering and math, by women is low all over Europe, in actual fact. I mean, I've read up a little bit for this program, and you can see that you're quite right, this problem is not, you know, Malta, this is UK. And one of the things that I found interesting was that I discovered that previously in the UK, women were actually quite involved at quite a higher level, going right back to Bletchley Park and that kind of thing, where there were a lot of women around and not a lot of men around. So a lot of women sort of took up IT, as it was in those days. And then somehow, over the years, the female participation started to dip again, and we're having to sort of relearn how it was previously. It hasn't been a sort of straight upward line or anything like that. I did notice when I was doing the career stand for the University of Malta that there were a lot of women who said they liked maths, but weren't sure what to do with it. And it was obvious that IT was not a subject that was sort of coming to mind. So you obviously must have had a very decent level of maths. And for example, Rebecca, I'm looking at Rebecca at the moment. What sort of made you go for this subject in particular?
I think I've always liked tech and all the gadgets and computing and stuff. And when I was studying, I remember two subjects which I found most interesting were computing and business and accounts. So I was sort of, and maths. So I was sort of between all of those subjects, and eventually I think I decided sort of to go more towards the computing stream because I started to like the programming aspect of it. So I sort of just fell into it, in a sense. Like, so then I just continued, sort of took up maths as A-levels and computing, and kept on going all the way through university. Yeah, it started out sort of from the programming side, I think. I started to really like it.
And yourself,
basically, I was always the type of child that if I had a toy and it had batteries, I wouldn't be interested in the toy itself. I would be interested in unscrewing all the screws and getting every type of component inside out and dismantling everything. I was always that type of person. Eventually, we had computing ICT lessons rather in primary school, actually. So I started getting more interested in that kind of area from that time. Then eventually I chose computing, and I couldn't choose one of the sciences actually, so I decided to go on computing and accounts, as Rebecca said, and I just kept on going from there since it was one of my preferred subjects, basically.
Brendy, the organisation that you've put together now, this NGO, you do this obviously being an NGO by definition, you do it in your own time because you really want to do it, and my experience is that you're more likely to take out money out of your own pocket than you are to get anything back. This is quite a commitment. So what do you actually do with that time? I mean, your time is precious. You work full-time studying? Or
in fact, all of us work on a full-time, but then we are growing as a team so as to split the work up, not to be overloaded. But then we organize workshops for children aged between 6 up to 13. we try to introduce the idea of coding. We have these robots with that can be programmed through a drag and drop interface, so we can do things as complex or as easy as much as you want to.
You'll have to explain drag and drop, I'm afraid. Sorry, excuse my ignorance.
So, for example, if you have this application and you have chunks of programming code on the side that's ready and they don't have to write it, so they have to drag it onto an area and then they press play and the robot executes this stuff one after the other. Basically, we try to show them what we do eventually at our workplace. I mean, that when we code, the computer does that. It sees what we write and it executes it. But we're trying to introduce the idea to kids in a very simple way. Essentially, that, for example, in my case, computing programming was introduced like that to me. And from that this concept, I noticed that I'm attached to it. I mean, sort of I can relate. I like the way it works, and it interviewed me to work to follow computing.
And these workshops, are they done in schools or do you organize things outside, extracurricular?
We find sponsors, and we had some sponsors who sponsored us the venue, and we can organize our workshops there. But then we are invited to schools. For example, we were invited to St. Joseph. They had a family fun day, and we did these activities with our robots, and from then we started marketing our events and on our Facebook page and social media.
In fact, I noticed that you have a very, very good social media presence on that. Yes. Certainly Facebook anyway. It's very popular, isn't it?
Social media is very important nowadays. Yes. We reach most of our members from there. So
both members and other the members of the NGO itself. So for example, parents with kids that come to our workshops can see the ads on Facebook itself. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's absolutely essential, isn't it, nowadays? They tell me that Facebook is a bit passé now. It's all Instagram and other channels. But anyway, that's something else. I've read about Dash, Daisy and Dot. So I really want to hear who's going to tell me about Dash, Daisy and Dot. Jolly good, Rebecca. Tell us.
So Dash, Dot and Daisy are these cute little robots. As Rainy said, they're designed to help kids to dive into the world of robotics and computer programming mainly. To control the robots, all you need is basically a tablet, an iPad, and a particular app which lets you sort of, as Brennan was explaining, like drag and drop these commands. For example, if you have a command that says move forward 100 centimeters, you just drag this and drop it, you press start, and you see like Dash running away like just a meter off, you know? Mm-hmm. So for kids, it's like really entertaining. You see their face light up when they start to play around with these things and get them thinking, you know, like what's behind all of this that we're doing, you know. They're really fun and easy to use. We've had kids as young as 5, 6 starting to like program and code their own sort of little maze around obstacles. And so these are the robots we've been using in our workshops and events.
Well, that's their world, isn't it? I mean, it's your world as well, because you're obviously much younger than I am. But nowadays, I mean, I have grandchildren. They just swipe and they use my iPhone better than I do, you know. So I can see that it's their world, really. So I can imagine they would be absolutely fascinated by something like that. And do you think that would interest them enough, and perhaps also, as you say, interest their parents enough to encourage them to continue along those line or in that field?
I think so. So I think if they already sort of have an interest and an inkling towards IT and computing and all of this, I think these sort of gadgets and robots and whatnot, I think they sort of help push them a bit further, you know. And I've had sort of a student come up to us to one of the workshops last workshop we've done, she just said, sort of, I want to be a coder like you guys when I grow up, and we were like, oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah,
like, good luck. Like, this is like,
what you're looking for. It makes it worth it.
Absolutely.
Professor de Bono, I'm of a fairly feminist bent, so I'm always keen to imagine that a girl can do more or less anything a guy can do, and maybe even better sometimes. So it bothers me a little bit to ask this question, but do you feel, and I'm asking you on purpose and not by name, do you feel that women bring something to the table when it comes to ICT that is of benefit to the sector?
Well, of course. The female participation gets new ideas, new ways of seeing things. And I also already mentioned the social aspect, where, believe it or not, females tend to give more input from that side than males actually do.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely there is always a better way to do things, by putting ideas together, one would come up with better solutions. At the end of the day, everybody wants to improve the life of people. So,
Bernie, what would your take be on that?
No, I agree with that. I think it's important to have both men and women work together. As I mentioned, I believe that men and women think in different ways. So that helps when solving, especially computers based on algorithms, problems, how you reason things out, how you go about a problem. So I think having both types of ideas on board helps in moving a project forward.
What do you think? What do you think about that? Do you think it's because it's a difficult question, you know? Because we're talking about equality, but then one has to sort of look at and say, why more women? Why do we really want more women on board? And I think that there must be, apart from the equality, a desire for equality. There is perhaps this attitude that, you know, there are different ways of thinking about something, and perhaps women bring something different to the table.
I think even in the workplace, like having equality, even for representation, sort of you've got family-friendly measures, stuff like this, which is very important to take into consideration. You know, sometimes it's certain things are underestimated. Even having female colleagues and co-workers, it may help in certain circumstances. Some women might feel more comfortable working with a larger balance of women in their team or in their
business. That's what I was going to say. It's like normalizing the idea at the end of the day. Nowadays, it's still a bit rare, to be fair, that women work in IT, for example. So the fact that having more women working in IT, it's a normal thing.
What about role models again? Obviously, in the example, for example, that Rebecca just gave about somebody saying, you know, I want to be a programmer like you or a coder like you. How important is it to have these role models? I would have thought yes, but that's a very obvious answer. What do you think about that?
Yes, I think having role models is one of the most important points. If you want to get on board young ladies, for example, if you ask 7 or 8 year olds what do they want to be when they grow up, most will tell you, I want to become a teacher. Why? Because they see their teacher every day and they can relate to her. In fact, that idea started going away when they started exploring other work, and I think having role models is crucial. In fact, recently, during the last Girls in IT day we had, we turned this into a Girls in IT week, and every day we featured a woman from the local industry, telling us where she works, what she does, and we tried to show diversity in the workplace. I think that's very important if we want to start working towards a better equality in IT.
And apart from the workshops, I know you do these workshops, do you do other things within the NGO? Do you have other activities?
Yes, in 2017 we started this Untold Science event, and we organized a fashion show, and we tried to reorganize the fashion show. Obviously, it's very stereotypical, I know, but we tried to encourage young girls and women to attend. After this fashion show, we had workshops, and we tried to show how ICT was required to set up this fashion show. For example, we had fashion designers, and they explained the process from how IT is required to get a dress, which is an image sort of in their head, and how do they get to the final result, how they use IT. We also had graphic designers, and they showed, and for example, during the fashion show, we had a backdrop, and they showed the process, how they got to the final result. And we also had photography, how they can edit, and anything, and essentially how IT was required to set up the show. It was very interesting. It was one of our biggest events to date.
I can imagine that being extremely popular.
Yes, we have other plans in mind for future.
Yes, is there anything you can tell me about, or is it still...
It's still... Mid-30 stages, so...
But this idea, I loved that idea. In fact, I had read something about this fashion show. It's really put a whole new slant on the idea of the fashion show, and shows how, as Professor De Bon was saying, ICT is everywhere. You can't breathe now without ICT. So I think it showed a good example of perhaps the hidden part of ICT that you don't normally think about, but you've sort of brought it to the fore. Yes, what about, we were saying, Professor Warner, before, about this trying to get them young. These young ladies are really trying to get them young. They're going in and talking to five-year-olds. Clearly, to go to university and do ICT, as we had discussed before the programme, you need to have a really good level of maths in all the courses that you mentioned before. But perhaps we need to persuade more people to actually give themselves to maths, give themselves the opportunity to take up ICT by becoming more interested in maths.
Yeah, I think one of the problems with the maths at the moment is that it doesn't show where it leads you, right? So we are, our kids are learning mathematics, they're learning mathematics to add, you know, subtract, but they don't understand what they are doing. They don't understand the algorithm, for example, that when they're doing a multiplication, they're doing an algorithm, right? So as soon as you remove one digit, first you multiply one digit with one digit, then two digits with two digits, as soon as you get to the third digit, you need an algorithm. You need to wait and think before executing. Mm-hmm. And that's an algorithm. So you need a computing device to do that for you, right, to support the way it thinks. And imagine, right, as soon as the numbers grow. Right, if we're looking at a matrix, for example, what's a matrix? Yeah, well, your TV set is a matrix. Right, it's just a set of numbers, right, which displays a color. Right, so we have three colors, RGB, right, red, green, and blue. And with those primary colors, you get the color that you're watching on your TV. Right? So it all depends on numbers and how you're going to show those numbers. Teachers and students do not really map these two together, these things together. So this is what's normally needed.
I think this is what the girls have to do.
Otherwise it's boring stuff, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm sure the teachers do their best. We don't want to criticize math teachers. But certainly there needs to be a little bit more inspiration, I think, so that the students will be keen to take up maths. And I wish I had my time over again, because I've become much more interested in maths. I'm past learning it now, but I really appreciate what a wonderful, wonderful subject it is. And believe it or not, our 20 minutes are over, and I'm going to have to just say thank you very much to Bernine, to Rebecca, and to Rowena, and also, of course, to Professor Carl James de Bornau, the Dean of the Faculty of Information and Communication Technology, and thank you all for coming on the programme today.
Thank you for listening to 100 Years of Women on Campus. If you would like to hear the programmes again, just go to www.maltauniversitybroadcasting.com and click on Webcasts. Join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. You have just listened to 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri.